Yo, 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 welcome to JavaScript Jam.
Beep, 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 beep.
We're live right here, right now at Render ATL, looking over the city. It's dope.
Beautiful, beautiful view.
Yes, sitting here with our boy Dom. Dom. Yep.
Dom.
Totally. All right. I am Scott Sandling, and this I am a technical community manager at Edgio and co-host of this here podcast, JavaScript Jam.
And I am Anthony Campola, developer advocate at Edgio.
Yeah. And you are?
The last time I checked, I'm unsure, so this may be something I circle back on later. Demetrius Clark, head of developer experience at Zeta.
Nice.
Or Zeta, if you say data and data differently.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of interesting.
That's what it is.
Every time someone asks me, I'm like, which one do you use, data or data? And they're like, oh, this. And I'm like,
that's it.
I've just been wondering what the name meant, period.
Because it's like, I think for a while they were even branding like as a Zeta base.
Oh.
And then they dropped the base. And
that's
now they're
probably
just
okay.
They dropped the base?
Right.
Drop it.
Drop the base. Drop the base.
Yeah.
We would be terrible DJs. I just want to put that out there.
But great radio hosts.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Don't put me on some mixers.
Yeah. I could pick good songs, but that's like probably all you get from me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Birds flying high. Ooh. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Are you a singer or are you a DJ?
Mixture.
What aren't you?
What aren't you?
I've been like really impressed by your range.
Oh, thank you.
Of course.
Appreciate that.
Anytime.
All right. So yeah, I'm so excited to be sitting here today.
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah,
we've seen each other at so many conferences.
Yeah, I've talked to you where you've been working at like three separate companies at this point.
And every time you're like, oh, when are we gonna get a JavaScript jam on it?
Let's do something.
Yep. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. Cool. So what are you doing at Render, man?
So I was at the first Render, and I just like, for me, so I've been an event runner before. I ran React Adelphia for a good 3 years, and we're actually spinning that back up this year, so I'm really excited.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm so stoked. Well, that's like, I tell people all the time, like that, everybody always asks, like, you know, what led to people, like, getting to know you? And it was just really being, like, super involved in my local community, like Philly. So I'm from Philadelphia, South Jersey, but you're basically a diet Philadelphian when you live in South Jersey. And like for me, you know, everybody overlooks Philly for New York, right? It's easy. That's where big tech happens in the East Coast. And I just realized there were so many talented folks around me when I was coming up like 7 years ago. And I really wanted to put their voices into the rest of the development ecosystem, because I started to get involved in like the broader community, the Twitter community. And I realized just how like Philly really keeps to itself. And you know, to a point I like that, but it's also like, I want other people to see how talented Philly was. And I also wanted to show people inside of Philly that there was so much opportunity outside of Philly for Philadelphians. So I built React Adelphia, and for me, that was where I started to like decide who I wanted to be in my career. Like a lot of people always try to figure out, you know, what in the time that I spend doing the thing that I'm doing, what is my outcome and what do I want it to be? For me, it was like, let's get people jobs. Like, I am a career transitioner, a bootcamp graduate.
Were you already at Cloudinary when you started that? Or was that beforehand?
Yeah, that was before. So actually,
so I kind of parlay that into that job.
So it's my first job ever was at a small three-person company named Red Queen. Like, worked out of my boss's house in his office. And so for me, I started really like in the front end developer space, and I didn't really have like a huge like following and any of that. And then at Red Queen, I built a small meetup because we built a React tooling SDK for second screen applications for video games. So basically we would take like game data, and if you're a gamer, there's an application called Overwolf, which is like an overlay on your game. Mm. We were second screen apps. So I did that for a while, and I told them when they first were looking for a senior engineer for their first hire, I like DM'd the manager, and I was like, hey, look, like, I'm not that. This will be my first job, but I can come and like, I know how to build communities. I'd been building communities my whole life, like gaming communities and stuff like that. So I knew how to gather people around a topic and a subject.
That's probably why you're already hip on Discords.
Oh, it's a whole, it is weird how much of the stuff that you do Like, people all the time, especially when I was first starting out of my boot camp, they were like, take retail off of your resume. It has nothing to do with anything. Mm. Retail is 100% why I am where I am right now.
Yeah.
It's not because I, you know, sat in retail and I, you know, I sold things. It's because, and I was a little bit different. I loved building relationships with my customers. I worked at Vans for a few years, mm-hmm. and like people would bring me like dinner. Like my customers That's would awesome. Bring in like extended family to spend hundreds of dollars because they were like, I love just sitting guy. And talking. Well, because I'm also not going to let you buy some BS. Like I don't, if your shoes look like crap, I'm going to tell you, don't buy those. Those don't look good on you. Buy these. This is what you would like. And yeah. So I kind of, like I said, for me, that it builds you. Everything that you have done builds you, and you can't get rid of it. You can't escape it. So use it as a driving force.
Hell yeah, dude. No, and that's a great thing, though, that you have the ability to recognize that and see where it does help you, because a lot of people actually have trouble connecting the dots. Like, you know, everybody says, like, okay, try and use your background to show the benefits of how, you know, how you're going to be a valuable, you know, an asset to, in your future role here. And a lot of people can't really put their thumb on it, like what that looks like, whereas you're just like spitting it out. Like,
I think it's a lot to do with like self-confidence. I would say that I think a lot of the thing that drives me is my ability to like, I've never really, can I curse on this?
Sure.
I've never really given a shit what people think about me. Like I
yeah, some people are, they're ashamed of like, oh, I did this kind of.
And it's fair. Like I don't think everybody should be how I am. Like not everybody needs to be this like fully confident person to make it in tech. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is a time that you have to sit and think about, like, look at anybody successful in their life. They all didn't start that way. And, you know, everybody, like the corny influencers online, right, always are like, well, Oprah didn't get her start until she was in her 40s or something. And it's like, but that's true. Like, it's corny. And I think the worst things about life are the corny things are true, right?
I said that in a podcast, like a couple podcasts ago.
Well, dude, it's like, and it's like, it's,
yeah, you did.
It's hard for people to like fathom that that's like real advice. But like at the end of the day, you know, I just turned 30 in April, and you know, everybody, 30? There's people, right, that where it's like, are you a baby still or are you older? Like, what does that look like? And I think to get to here now, it's like, I went through a lot of BS in my life, and I look back at it all, and it made 100% of why
forged
I am.
You.
Yeah, mm-hmm. forged me into the man I have become today. Yes. But yeah, we were off track. The big thing, I started a meetup at Red Queen called RQ React, and I was just teaching people React. It was like 10 people a month. I wrote a workshop every month for a year.
That's awesome.
While I was doing my work as
an amazing experience.
And so I learned how early, like, teaching people teaches you.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because you start to think outside of your own, like, ideology of how to learn things.
It solidifies it, too.
Well, it also, like, it makes you, because I learn a very specific way.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tyler McGinnis. Without Tyler McGinnis, I wouldn't have learned React as fast as I did.
Okay. One of the best React educators.
Well, dude, Why? And this is before.
What's different?
I don't know. I think he's a person that I would hang out with. And so, like, it's funny. So I took TylerMcGinnis.com.
So he was relatable.
He was relatable for me. Right. Not for everybody. Exactly. For me. Dude, I was on, you know what I mean? I was a Udemy fiend. I was buying them 1099 courses like you couldn't tell me to stop.
Dude, there's a settlement now. Because of Udemy, you know how they used to do that thing where they would have courses like $150 and then randomly they would be like $10.
And they wouldn't even tell you as a creator
that they got sued. A whole bunch of people are getting payouts.
Yeah, as they should. Well, so another person who I like to accredit my career success to, Andrew Mead, and he is strictly on Udemy. Mm-hmm. One of the most successful React teachers on Udemy.
Yeah, he has some great courses.
An absolute spectacular. Shout out to you, Andrew. You're one of my good homies. Absolutely spectacular guy. I reached out to him. After I'd taken like two of his courses, and I was like, yo, dude, like, just want to let you know, like, how much of an impact you've made on me.
Yeah.
And he was like, are you in Philly? I was like, yeah. He's like, do you want to get a beer?
Oh,
I was like,
nice.
So badly. Yeah.
Yes,
and so like, we've been friends ever since. And Tyler,
did you
actually
know he was in Philly at the time when you reached out.
I saw that he was like, he had Philadelphia in his butt. But again, like, I was such a noob at the time that I was like, nobody wants to come and meet
me.
What the hell? Like,
yeah. I bet
what do I got cool. to teach you? Like, you know, I have no experience yet, but yeah, he reached out to me and was super cool. Tyler, the same. I'd reach out to him and like thanked him. And that was a big thing in the early career for me, was like, because of that confidence, dude, I was messaging
I love doing that too.
Kent Dodds,
yeah,
also shout out, back early in my career, they were like, they wanted me to write tests. We didn't have any tests for our front end at Red Queen yet. And I was lost, dude. I had no idea what I was doing. Mm. We didn't have like an education budget. We were like super, super small startup. And so I reached out to Kent and I was like, hey, man, like you're never.
Teach me the trophy.
Well, dude, I was like, you're never going to. And this is before he even had like testing JavaScript and all of like the big courses.
Yep.
I was like, hey, man, like you're probably never going to see this. But like if there's any advice that you could give me to get started, like I just really don't even know where to start. This man sent me a full-on, like, book response, as you would believe Kent would do, and hit me with, like, do this, 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 and this, and when you're done, come back to me, and I'll give you the next steps, and we'll keep kind of going back and forth with each other. So, side cut advice, never be afraid to reach out to. Yes. First of all, these high follower developers that everybody looks at and is like, oh, my God, like, they're never going to talk to me. They're regular
people. Yeah. They started at zero followers one
they
day.
Started and your following count means absolutely nothing.
Yeah. And here's the thing, treat them like real people.
Treat them like real people, man. Like especially when you see them in person, like don't it feels weird for some. You know what, this is it. I'm going to get spicy here. This is why I think a lot of people have disrespect for developer advocates today. It's because I think that there is a level of grift that has arrived to build the followings that have come to fruition now. And because of that, they want to be treated like royalty. And so they make you treat them that way. And so then you go and you meet the kind of like OGs of the space who have built their following just because of consistent movement.
Yeah.
And then you think that they want you to treat them that way. And they're like, please do not.
Yeah.
I am a regular dude.
Woman. First show up into the space, you'll see this whole swath of people and it'll be hard to know who are the grifters and who aren't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if, once you're around for a couple of years, then you kind of get a sense. You actually meet these people.
No, but I mean like when you first start, and first of all, if I were just starting, I wouldn't give a single shit. I would, if you're a grifter or not, like if you gave me any of your time, I'm in. Like, I so understand. That's why
they give you their time. I think they wouldn't be a grifter then, like by default.
Maybe.
But I don't know. It's like sometimes even if they give you their time, it's like, well, they do. And then they'll be like, well, you know, oh, you could do or you could buy my course on this. And it's like, it's always
consider that a legitimate response.
It's always like a funnel, right? Like for them. So like, it's like they'll respond, but then three messages in get you to the funnel. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And no shade to like how you build your career, but don't put that into a position where everybody thinks that is the only way to grow. I mean, you know, not to toot my own horn. I think a ton of people in the space at least know who I am or what I do. And go look at my Twitter. I have like 3,000 followers. Like, I don't bump up my numbers. I don't ever care to like, you'll never see me doing like, check the thread below to see
573.
Check the thread below to see how Demetrius made it to stardom. You're never going to see that. And it's not because like, I don't want to grow. I want to grow, but I want to grow with like relationships.
Yes. And I think sharing that authentically and just being you in a thread
would be dope, is a part of it. Right.
Sure. Why not? I don't know.
It looks like with the React Adelphia one, even that's got like 300 followers. Mm-hmm, so it's like you probably weren't even trying necessarily to optimize for that. You're like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find the people on the streets.
How do I get... Well, so React Adelphia was interesting because React Adelphia... So I went from RQ React to React Adelphia, which actually got me my second job at Guru. So I was at Guru for like 6 to 8 months or a knowledge management. Yeah. So where Homer works.
G-E-R-U.
G-U-R-U.
G-U-R-U. Okay.
Guru. So it's in Philly.
Multiple gurus.
It's like if you were to take Notion and just make it specifically like a database for your company that has no external like way to it's strictly for onboarding and things of that nature.
Got it.
But when I was there, they had offered up their venue and, you know, so we grew like a ton and they had like an AV setup. So when I found out they had an AV setup, this was pre-pandemic. And I was like, I'm a huge gamer, super nerd. I'm on Twitch, Discord, all of that stuff. To what you said earlier about like how, you know, the Discord stuff. I was like, I could probably get, everybody always wonders about like monetary logistics when you run a meetup. Like, how do I get money from sponsors to get them to fly people in? That's just not, that's not realistic. Mm. For like a conference, much more realistic. The money is there. Mm-hmm. For a meetup, like nobody wants to give you more than like, you know, food and a venue if they
have some
to.
Tacos.
Give you some tacos. I was a big pizza and LaCroix. So when I started React Adelphia, I was like, okay, I bet you I could get people to call in and give talks.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get people to call in, I'll do 1-1-1. We'll do Philly, remote Philly. And so I'll bring these big names. This is actually one of the first times I reached out to Jason.
That's really smart.
Mm-hmm. One of the first times I reached out to Jason Langsdorf. Now he's like an older brother to me, like mentor, awesome. And he'll never admit that he is, but he is. He was one of the first I reached out to, and I was like, people will show up to see Jason and see all of these Philly talents at the same time. And I think by the end of Reactadelphia, we had gotten close to 40, 50 people jobs.
Nice.
Either in the city or outside of the city. And like, awesome. To me, like, that's not a huge number, but that's like,
that's huge.
Shoo.
That's a great thing.
That is what I wanted. And that's why I'm trying to revive Reactadelphia. Cause now that I'm established as far as I need to be, how do I find, like, I had to take a break. Cause I got to a point where I really wanted to grow my career and I didn't know how to juggle everything. Mm-hmm. And so now I think that
the pandemic happened too. I'm sure that pandemic didn't happened. Help.
And well, the pandemic actually boosted a lot of what I did into why I started to become so busy.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, because you were smart enough to have already gotten the remote angle in there.
Understood.
Pre-pandemic. It exactly. sounds like, which totally. Were like really like people who were already in a position to go remote when everyone had to go remote were like, light years frantic. Ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, and then everyone else was frantic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like having, and so everyone's commenting like, oh, we heard about Reactadelphia. We've seen the Discord. Like, could you do that for us? You know, so I did, Kirk Kempel got me in on GraphQL Summit. That was my first like remote conference that I had helped with.
Yep.
So I built the Discord for that. And they actually ended up moving their DX team to the Discord, which was pretty cool. And then I had done a couple of contracts here and there with a couple of companies. I did Orbit. I moved their B2B Slack over to a Discord. I made a tweet recently, and if you are still running your community on Slack, you are doing your community a disservice. And I know what you're going to say. I've heard all of your arguments already. Like, I understand you're comfortable where you are, but it's not about you. And you may say, oh, well, my community won't move over. They're used to Slack.
Would you include support in that? Community support.
I think that really is up to... So, like, when I was at Netlify, mm-hmm. Netlify support was definitely not excited to do more asynchronous non-forum support mm-hmm. inside of a like a live channel, like a Discord. Mm-hmm. And I actually totally respect that, because it's like... I think that people in this industry are so entitled that they want, there's a difference between wanting to get help and asking for it and waiting for it and demanding help and being, and being, and then publicly talking shit on X company or X person for taking a day to answer you.
Yeah.
And so like
that happens so
and I like mean, so
every, it doesn't matter.
And I don't think community should be necessarily support. Like, you can do support in community, but like, it's if a community is only support, then you're support. You're not really a community.
Right.
Well, so true. It's funny though. I think I have a probably a hot take on this is that nobody wakes up in the morning, grabs their fresh cup of Joe, and is like, damn, I can't wait to talk about my day inside of your company Discord. Like, nobody. I don't care. Like, can you get to a point where like technical conversations are happening that are like surrounding your product? Sure. Mm. Can you build engagement that has nothing to do with your product? Kind of. Like, really, like, most of your time once you open up a company Discord is going to be spent doing a pseudo support.
Yeah.
Even as a DevRel, totally. Like, you're going to be doing, like, you're going to be answering questions. Like, when I got to Zeta, that was like, I slimmed down the channels. I made it so like, you know, 2 to 3 extra like fluff channels of if you want to have conversation, this is where we can have it. Mm-hmm. But like, I focused in, I changed over to the forums UI, which, you know, if you're not there yet, I think it's a super good move to.
The forums UI does kind of change it, because that allows the two can exist.
It's long living.
Kind of in next to each other.
Yeah, yeah. It becomes a split space for that type of thing. And I think, you know, I'm working on it right now, and I did it at the Netlify for the Jamstack community. I love the API is terrible, but I love that I can use the API to scrape the forums so that, you know, a lot of the pushback that I get from teams is like, well, there's no SEO discoverability for answers to questions.
And now there's ways around that.
Now there's ways around that. Yeah. You can literally scrape every forum to a site, set up your keywords, and you're off to the races.
What do you think, though, about people who... Like, technically, Discord is a public space, but some people don't necessarily go to it thinking that. Do you feel like you need to kind of alert people to let 100%. Them know you'll be scraping?
Yeah, I think, like, that's, like, should be right up front in your... But, like, this is the sad part of, like, ignorance to platforms is, like, once you've joined a space like that, like, this is why when people argue with me about Slack, I'm like, dude, good luck trying to fight me on this. You own everything when you join a Slack. You can see everything. When you're admining,
you see people's DMs.
You can see people's DMs.
Like, that alone
you're so
really
weird
skeevy.
For wanting that to. And you may not use that. I'm not going to say everybody that uses Slack is like this weird, like, overlord searching over your shoulder.
but it's always there.
But it's there, dude. Yeah. And, like, you know, the moderation isn't as granular. And I think that's an important piece. People, again, this is like a difference between are you doing this for your community or are you doing this for you and yourself?
Oh, dude, that is so deep because I continue to say that, like, even like just in my job, whatever. I'm like, look, it can't, you know, if you're really wanting to focus on community, period, right? Yeah. It's not about
you almost should leave your company out of it.
Yeah, it's not about me. It's about we.
Yeah,
right.
And providing value, like so many places that I've worked, so many places that I've contracted with, or just given advice to. Like, you don't always have to pay me. I'm happy to shout my opinions at you wherever.
Right.
But the big problem that a lot of companies have when they want to set up these community, wherever it is, whether it's Slack or forums or whatever, they want to extract way more immediately than is necessary. Mm-hmm. And dude, it is going to take you. I try to explain this to leadership at a lot of places.
Yep.
I could have 7,000 people in my Discord, and if only 3 people are engaged, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It does. That is not, people always ask for month over month growth of a Discord. And I think that that's a fine line of like fluff data. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, if I went from 1,000 to 2,000, at least people are knowing about the product. That's a cool point. Right. Yeah. But that A, doesn't mean they're a customer. B, they probably joined and never came back.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just one on like 50 Discord they got on their sidebars,
which is a big gripe. Oh my god, I have such a gripe with Discord. I talk about this a lot. The inbox UI on Discord could change Discord if they made it a mainstay feature of the platform.
Yeah,
like it's up in the top right corner. It's a little like inbox like icon, mm-hmm. and it only stays a popover. You can't full screen it. You can't, like, there's not even a way in the API to access it. I've tried to find what that looks like. Mm. But if you could have that, like what it allows you to do for people who don't know, and maybe this will help you, you know, slim down your Discords a bit. If you go into, you can mute full servers, but that actually is like a negative impact because you won't know unless you go to the server that things are happening.
Yeah, it's a guarantee you're just gonna forget the server.
You're gonna forget the server. Yeah. I do it all the time. I'm on Discord like habitually, and I still like can't keep up with the many servers that I'd love to. Mm-hmm. But if you go into individual channels, you can mute categories, but you can also mute channels. And when you mute channels, you can hide channels, which actually just came out with a new onboarding flow that lets you opt in or opt out. Like, everything was always opt in before.
Mm-hmm. And that was one of the big differences between Slack and Discord. Exactly. I kind of like that people would always be in all the channels and then have to opt out of channels, because then they at least start by seeing everything. Whereas Slack, you usually join, and if you don't go into the channel list and scroll through 500 channels, you
onboarding
is
bad on both platforms. I think Discord is trying to figure it out, but I think it's going to still take them a little bit of trial and error, because it's just like, it is true. They're coming from I've used TeamSpeak, I've used like all of these previous platforms that gamers would use to communicate while they were gaming. Like, I've used all of these, and now that was Discord. And so that's why it was already kind of community focused. But everyone's like, well, it's a joke platform. It's for gamers. It's not for professionals. I'm like, should you be adopting Discord at work for your channel communication? No. Should you be using it for every external communication you have? Yeah, most likely.
So what are your thoughts on old school just forums? Do you think there's still a place for that?
Yeah. Again, like, this goes back to like what your support team is comfortable with. Like, forums like Discourse, you know, are still very usable platforms. Like, I like
Discourse, because then that also, going back to the SEO,
it's built in.
People will Google things like, if you Google like Redwood Railway, you'll find like a Discord thing I've written about it, you know, like top on Google.
And that's, I think like there is, I'm excited to see, I'm going to release the thing that I put together for React Adelphia and for Zeta, open source. Basically what I want to do is I want to, The APIs for Discord are really annoying, where you have to unravel each forum message. So you have to unravel all of the forum messages and then do an API call for each message, so it like hits rate limits really quickly. So basically what I'm going to do is like a daily cron that scrapes it into Zeta. And then now I have like an actual individualized place that I have to call from that I control. And what that also gives you power to do is for events. When you do an event in Discord, I think that's one of actually the coolest things, events and stages in Discord, which are underutilized right now.
Definitely.
One of the cool things is that, you know, you have them, but you don't, once an event happens, it's gone. There's no like history of your event anymore. And also, attendee count doesn't really mean anything. Like, interested is a feature of an event, but you have no idea if interested showed up. You have no idea what that looks like or who ended up.
And some of the events, they are like a Discord event. Some of them is just like a Twitch thing. Channel. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which I like that they allow for external platform events. But now what you'll do is like I'll scrape with those forum messages. I will also scrape all of my events and now again have like past events, past attendees who showed up. Now this also gives my support team. So like Zeta is built on top of Elastic. So like we have really good fuzzy search capabilities built in, keyword search, semantic search, all built into the platform.
For some reason, I had been thinking Zeta was like a Postgres or something.
So we are built on Postgres, but we use like Kafka and then it sends out to our Elastic instance. So they basically, our founders come from, a lot of our team actually comes from Elastic. So they have like pretty deep knowledge on how important search is and what that looks like. So when it's built like right into your database, like, I mean, how many people reach for Algolia, right? Like you end up having to.
Yeah, no, that's huge because, you know, there's so many Postgres providers out there these days. Something like that. That's something you should really harp on.
Yeah. And I think we actually do a pretty good job of like, if you go to the website, like that's like a pretty mainstay feature that we talk about. But, you know, without shilling any more of the product, I think for me it's
not I want to learn more about Zeta.
It's really cool. It's funny, I'm not a big DB expert, so like coming here I actually got to like be customer zero, which was really dope. And I think every developer experience engineer out there, DX or DevRel, whatever the hell you call yourself, be customer zero first.
Way to add value.
You're gonna find so much holes, and everybody, you know, we can get into like what DevRel is to me, but you know, one of the biggest things that I think is underutilized for DevRel is that, and this is from a leadership perspective too, as I think everybody looks at a DevRel like they're just like these public shills that have to talk about, you know, the product in public. You do much better as a pseudo bug finder. Like when I join a company, my biggest goal, when I first start, and I'm only 4 months into Zeta right now, is to find what sucks. Like, what is the worst pieces? And start to work with engineering and give them that feedback and find a way to let them know in a way that isn't disrespectful, because it's like you can't just come and be like, hey, this sucks, fix it.
Yeah, you have like to come with something. Just somebody ever used it before shows up and says all your last years of work is crap.
Exactly. And things happen in a way that aren't really moldable after a certain amount of time. So like,
You lack context, which is both good and bad.
Sure.
Because you can say like, okay, I don't have any context, and so this is hard to do, and they need to know that. But at the same time, there may be a reason why they already knew that and had to make X, Y decision.
When you build a product for so long, you are no longer a user of the product. And that disconnects you from even if you dog food it, right? Like even if as an engineering team, you find ways to dog food your product, you are still an advanced user.
Yeah,
you are no longer.
You don't remember what it was like.
Seeing what onboarding looks like.
Yeah,
you are no longer. You understand exactly what to do, where to do it, and how.
Yep.
And that's where DX value comes in for me. Is that like, especially someone who comes in contextless has such a great view of the onboarding ramp, and that's why certain teams should, in my opinion, should report to DX or at least be really adjacent and connected.
Totally.
Is because it allows you to kind of like deploy that value in a way that your team probably hasn't.
What
in a long
is
time.
DX under in Zeta?
So this was my decision. When I came in, it was its own like vertical. Mm-hmm. And I think that is how it should be at every place.
And that's how it still is?
No. Or? So I decided I wanted to make sure that there was a like really deep connection between our team and engineering. Mm-hmm. I've worked at places that is not the case. I've worked at places where it is the case and it's still hard. I chose to be under product. So we're a fully engineering staffed company. Like we don't have marketing yet. We don't have like growth or anything like that. So we're really engineering led. And that's a good thing because that means you get like really great features really fast. But it also puts you into a position where you don't really understand what it looks like when it lands, right? Or how to circle back to it. Alex, who is the head of product at Zeta, is one of my favorites. Like I really enjoy working with him, and he doesn't treat me like he's my boss, but he is my boss. He treats me like I'm his equal. He comes to me as such. We brainstorm all the time, and it makes it so, you know, we have a deeper connection towards product engineers. We now are building a relationship that when we eventually do end up breaking off, like my goal is to get VP eventually and you run my own vertical again. But it allows you the time while we're small to really affect the culture. And that is the biggest problem I've seen at every company that I haven't worked at too, is that culture demands very specific things from DX or DevRel, which a lot of places still call it. Mm-hmm. And usually that's content machines. And sure, like, are we the best suited to make content? 100%. Should there be times where we focus specifically on like providing content? Yeah. Is it all our function should be? No, you're underutilizing your team. If you're hearing this and you're feeling some type of way, look in the mirror. It's probably you.
Yeah, I think DevRel or developer experience to me is the should be as cross-functional as possible. And this is a lot of question of what,
and you are,
what it's under is really hard, because you are going to be part marketing, part product, part engineering. It's like you can't really
touch more teams than anyone else. You touch more teams than anyone else.
And that's also why you end up being a great zero-worth user, and you end up being a great advocate, because you can see the big picture.
It's why you burn out too.
Yes.
Nobody understands in other verticals why that happens so fast, and why the DevRel superstars like end up going to run their own things eventually. Because you spend a lot of time being told no for ideas.
That too.
You spend a lot of time caring about something more than a lot of other people do because you're so cross-functional, and you spend a lot of time juggling. I tell everybody the hardest part of being in DevRel is that you don't take a ticket, complete it, and move on. You take a ticket and turn it into 5 tickets, and then juggle those tickets and explain the value of those tickets, and then get denied for 3 of the 4 or 3 of the 5 of those tickets. And then you have to take those 2 that did get approved and put all of your love and your attention into it. And so I think it's really easy to burn out because it has so much context switching, and no other team as actively works so cross-functionally as a DevRel team does, in my opinion.
Also, why people with ADHD do so well in it, I think.
Welcome to my life.
I know so many DevRels with ADHD. It's a very common thing, it seems like. I think that the context switching is part of why that seems to be a type
That's
of
been our
headspace
whole life.
That really... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Definitely.
Totally.
So I'd be curious to dig in on one of the things you said. You know, we always talk about adding value, you know, and with a community specifically, not necessarily DevRel, but when you have a community, when you have a Discord, when you have this space, like you talked a little bit about support, how that could be adding value. What other ways does a community act? How do you actually add value to your community without extracting value?
Yeah, so I think this really comes down to what your product is. You really have to think about, you know, if you're like, I'll speak from experience, right? Like we're a database provider, right? And so for us, like we fit into most stacks and we fit into most frameworks. And so that gives us a really unique position to be able to start doing education around those things. And it's still impacting users for our platform. So like me, like right now, shout out to Attila. He's been doing he's one of our senior DXers. He's been doing a ton of content just around like Next server actions and what that's going to look like with databases and teaching about React server components. And like a lot of companies would be like, that's not bringing me like immediate value. So like, why aren't you putting out videos strictly on our database? And like, we're still in there. Like, right. When he does a server action, he does his Zeta call and, you know, you can see what it looks like, but he is also teaching people the value of this new architecture that Next is coming out with. And
100%.
And so I think that is a way to add value, is to still focus deeply on education. And it always
love
isn't going
to,
gonna,
that.
It
that's,
isn't going to, it isn't going
to
convert all the time.
Things
right?
I do.
It's not going to be the thing that suddenly brings you 100 enterprise users, right? Like
that's hard to measure the impact.
I think that's another big problem for DevRel, is that we actually, because we're so cross-functional, we hit goals for other teams, but you can't track what that looks like, because you're like the alley-oop, you're the assist. And so like, I can be like, oh, I assisted in doing this, but what did that translate to? I'm unsure, because I was only 1/5 of the process, right? And so trying to extract monetary value as a DevRel is why you see DevRels get cut often, because they look back and they go, well, marketing made me this, sales made me this, engineering made me this.
Yeah, what did DevRel do for
DevRel
me?
DevRel made me content.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, that's unfair. And that's why we're talking about community. Dude, you're never going to get a month and be excited about what happened. You're going to get 6 months. You're going to get a year. And then you're going to look back and you're going, oh, wow. Like we built a lot of things in a year. But it takes that year to see any of that impact come full circle. So value education, value events in your ecosystem. It doesn't all have to be about you. And we talked about this a while ago with the Jamstack. We used to talk Jamstack all the time.
For sure. Yeah, I was like so hyped because I was someone who was actually asking for a Jamstack Discord before you showed up.
Yep. And so like, you know, when I got there, it was like, you know, to me, and you know, they may not hold the same value still for it, but I was like, people know that the Jamstack is Netlify, right? Like it's a known fact that they are synonymous in the way that they are marketed. And to that, there are also a ton of companies who rely on that term for their own marketing. Mm-hmm. And so what I tried to do, and I think actually worked out really well, was let me go to all of these other companies and boost whatever events they're having and just put their events in my Discord and just put let them come and teach people stuff that have nothing to do specifically with Netlify sometimes, or, and most of the time they would, because they would deploy it to Netlify. So it all kind of worked out in the end, but the rising tide when you're in an ecosystem like
Jason
we are.
Was really good at when he was working there, and he would, you know, have people come on and he would kind of work Netlify a little bit into his learn with Jason's, but it would just be like a tiny
but
sliver.
It was never forced, and it was it's something like
it always felt natural
because he would use it without working there. He still does, like he's not at Netlify anymore as a full-time employee, like he still uses Netlify for his sites.
This is great. Why wouldn't you?
It's like, and it's like you look at Kent Dodds with the Remix stuff, and that was like a huge thing, right? Like, do you only like Remix because you work there? And like, no, I watched him love Remix before joining Remix.
He still runs a whole freaking conference.
And now he's gone, and he's still involved. And so I don't know. I think it's just really easy to look at a bubble online and just believe whatever you hear. But
it's easy to be cynical.
And it's also like, so many companies do things that try to extract value from you. Yeah, so it's like you do have to be a little bit apprehensive and put up some guards.
It's like,
you're
an ethical company? Really?
And then most of them aren't, dude. And like, do you take VC money? Are you ethical anymore? Who knows? You know what I mean? Like, it's because you get to a point where, like, no matter how ethical you are, you need to make them their money back.
Yeah.
And to do that, you have to do things that I wouldn't say are unethical.
No.
But you have to do things
that. You have to optimize for a certain goal.
For extracting value. You have to find a way to finally, like, it doesn't matter how much value I can put in at a company, I at some point have to extract some value back. Mm-hmm. So rising tide of your ecosystem, I think, is another really good way to provide value to not only your community, but to the companies that you'd be adjacent with. Mm-hmm. And then I think, like, some of the companies that I think have done the best for community have figured out really good ways in which their community like to interact. And that usually is a thread about how they're doing or a thread about the technologies they're using, like engaging them daily in ways that they can engage back with you and not making them feel like they have to be the first engager really helps kind of build that like engagement trust, which I think like growth doesn't matter. Engagement does to me. I'd rather have 500 members with 400 members talking than 100,000 members with 10 members talking, 20 members talking.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think I like to optimize community strategy around. That's why I like using Orbit to track engagement, because they do this really good idea of like cross-platform identity. Where like from your YouTube to your GitHub to your LinkedIn to your Discord, you're one person.
Yeah, you want the God mode.
Yeah, and you I just get to see like, oh, this person is like across five of our platforms and helping people. Like, we need to be providing them value because they are doing this for free. And that's what I think a lot of the time happens. You know, you build these like ambassador programs and like you don't really do that much for them. You send them a swag box and like you're off to the but that's just more stuff for you to extract value. Mm. So like I think, you know, when I was at Cloudinary and Tessa and I would discuss like,
she's awesome.
Yeah. And she's amazing. I love her to death. We would discuss like it's really hard to get swag for people that actually provides value. So we would do like when it was during the pandemic and the Cloudinary ambassadors, we would like reach out to them and be like, what streaming equipment do you need?
Oh, wow. That's dope.
You know, how do we get it so that you can create content? And would we love if you created content for Cloudinary? For sure.
Right.
If you don't, like, you know, that's fine. But, like, you're in the program for that reason. You want to.
Yeah.
And, like, you would see the look on their faces. Like, and especially, like, you would be working with people who just don't have the means. And so, like, we'll buy you this Yeti mic. And, like, that's $100 to us who, you know, are sitting here with Shure mics and know what, like, good production looks like.
What happened with Redwood?
What do you mean? Tom bought me a camera.
Yeah.
Tom bought me like a $2,000 camera because he was watching me on JavaScript Jam back in the day. He was like, bro, you need some better production value. Let me send you a $2,000 camera for free.
And it's like that obviously is a large purchase.
That's kind of crazy. Yeah.
That's a large purchase.
He's a billionaire.
Sure, right. Sure. Easy for him to do that. Well, so are these companies. But, you know, you offer them this tiny setup, and it like changes things for them.
Right? Oh, heck yeah.
And so, you know,
that gets you hyped up to like make that content. Dude, you feel better about the content you're creating.
And then like people are like, where'd you get that stuff?
Rising tide lifts all boats.
Lifts all boats, man. Yeah. And then they're like, where'd you get this stuff? And you're like, dude, I was a part of the Cloudinary Ambassador program. And they, you know, they hooked it up.
Want to join.
There you go.
And so, yeah, I don't know. Every company can't do it. I get it. And not every company is there yet, but
flywheel. It's like, how do you get the flywheel? That's where the VCs come in.
That's, man,
one thing I really loved about, you know, I bring this company up so much, but they did such an amazing job. It
ClickFunnels.
Yes, ClickFunnels. Like, seriously, I'm not even kidding, dude. I can bring this up in every conversation. It doesn't matter. It always pertains to the conversation. So like they do an amazing job at their ambassadors. Okay, they're affiliates though, right? And they have a process, even actually their customers, of making them, giving them spotlight, mm-hmm. right? And they do it with,
I love that too, their customer spotlight. Oh, hell yeah. Spotlights are another huge way to provide value back.
Yeah, Funnel Hacking Live is this huge event that they do every year, and it's like 5,000 people now every time.
Yeah,
awesome. And they sell it out every single time.
Yeah,
right. And they have some amazing speakers and stuff, whatever, but they also freaking highlight the people that are using their software. And they the only thing they're making money off of, by the way, they're not making money off of how much you make. Mm. They're just making money off of you paying them $197 or $297 a month, right? That's it. And so the beautiful thing is they're celebrating how much you're making, though. Like, if you hit $1 million in your funnel, that you get a 2 Comma Club award,
oh,
right?
Cool.
And you get it on stage at Funnel Hacking Live.
That's dope.
Right? And they freaking have like 20 of these a week, by
celebrating
the way.
Your community. Like,
yeah,
this was a big...
And they give out free swag. They don't make you pay for it. And also, the swag is phenomenal.
That is another big, big,
you
big,
have to
big
have
thing,
something
man.
That you want to wear.
I understand that all companies can't be spending hundreds of thousands on swag.
But
don't buy shirts if they're going to be crap.
It goes a long way.
We get shirts all the time. Like, it is a, like, that's a whole nother
topic. A whole nother rabbit hole. Yeah. But either way, I'm just saying, they do a great job at spotlighting the customer. And then as far as, like, their affiliates, right, they do a really amazing job with that too. Like they have, it's kind of like, you know, like direct marketing or network marketing companies,
sure.
How they're like, oh, if you hit this level or you do these amounts of things, then you get a free car or whatever. Right.
Right.
Well, ClickFunnels has like a program like that where they'll pay for your car. If you hit, you know, so many, people that you're bringing in or whatever, but it's not just about that. It's also just highlighting them, from other different angles too. It doesn't have to be that big. Right.
Sure.
So anyway,
no, I think, I think you're totally right. It's like
they did a really great job of that.
Creative ways.
It built 60-70% of their company.
Yeah, creative way. Well, see, this is where I see
other people.
A lot of companies are always like, we're community led growth.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
It's a really hard thing to actually be.
Well, dude, it's just because, like, you.
ClickFunnels crushed it.
You don't.
They did PLG too, though.
You don't do enough for customers that don't pay.
Yeah.
And that's where I know if you're community-led growth or not. What you treat non-paying customers like is how I judge you. Yes, do you want them to become paying customers? Yes. But how do you support them to get there?
Mm.
How do you they come in with an idea, right?
See,
what does that look like?
That's a big difference between, say, like SaaS and then the SaaS developer world.
Yeah.
So like SaaS focused developer world versus SaaS direct consumer world or B2B, whatever, non-developer world, is the fact that there are usually no like free tiers for the most part for that stuff, right? Like ClickFunnels,
right.
There's no free tier. It's like 14-day free trial, 30-day free trial.
Yeah, we have like huge free. I think that's also like that's one of the cool things about.
Well, that's more PLG focused though, right?
That's more PLG, yeah. Exactly. And so like I think this is just like every company now that sees successful developer communities suddenly now is like, let's hire a community person, like let's get them in, and then like we're gonna grow this massive community overnight.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Right.
A, you're gonna hire a community person. You're gonna want them more from them. You're gonna make them juggle.
Back to the burnout.
You're gonna make them juggle.
Yep.
And you're gonna want to see them do this, that, and the third. And you're not gonna tell them that up front. You're gonna say, "Oh no, just do the community." I've seen it time and time again. I've seen them burn out time and time again. And I've seen them leave and go and do anything else. Mm. You know how many DevRels I talk to now that are like ready to go back to engineering? Because it is singular focus. It is, I get the thing. I do the thing.
Yeah.
I move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been fighting an idea with a lot of different places. I think one of the things missing from a DevRel organization is a solid TPM.
Technical project manager.
Mm-hmm. So your job when you do DevRel is not only to be the executor, mm-hmm. but also the strategist, mm-hmm. also the planner, mm-hmm. also the project creator, the tracker, and the follow through.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Oh my God, I could talk so much about this, because that's when I started at StepZen. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, a small company, and like they wanted me to be the entire, like you're saying, all of those things.
An org.
It was my first time even doing DevRel.
An org. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people get into DevRel and maybe they're seniors or something, and it's their first time doing DevRel, and so they know how to execute on things, but it's not like they're good at. You're going to get told no a ton of times. You're going to deal with a lot of politics. You're going to, like, there are so much more than just the doing of the job.
And the strategy is much harder than people think. It's like, you can create content. It's like, anyone can create content and can come up with 1,000 content.
Right.
But is it the right content?
Yeah.
And should you be doing content? Does that need to be the focus at this moment?
Yeah.
Like, do I need to be talking about the product yet? Are we there?
Mm-hmm.
That is an important question to be asking, and I will fight that fight.
Yeah, like, so you could be putting out content for a product that's not even good yet.
Dude, I tell people every time, every interview I've ever taken, and this is why I've gone through a ton of interviews. and I have, and I always keep interviewing forever, even if I'm really satisfied with the company.
You should
be. Just to see, A, like, what are other companies still valuing me as? Not even monetarily, but
staying,
like,
on your toes, dude.
But what do you think I am? Like, what do you think I do? And that helps me, A, if I ever have to work with that company as a partner, or if I ever do want to go work for that company. But the big kind of misstep that a lot of these companies have is that they have no understanding that the level of juggling that they're going to ask from you also exists outside of all of the strategy and planning that you have to do to get there. And you almost have to be, like, strategic and planning on the run, right?
Cool. We're getting close to the hour. I think we need to
meet
our next guest soon. So we'll probably start wrapping it
Love
up
that.
Here. Let our listeners know. Or any final thoughts before we start closing it out?
If you're hiring for DevRel, be more upfront about your expectations. Mm. If you're running a community, provide more value. If you see me, come and talk to me. If you want to ask me questions, DM me. Like, I am an open
book.
He's
a good time.
I'll literally, as you see, we just had to wrap me up because I will literally babble on.
I would love to go for another hour.
Find me again. I'd love to do more. I love talking to you guys.
Totally.
Do you do Twitter Spaces much?
So I, like, in my transition to, like, leadership, have moved away from the doing of things for the most part.
I mean, just like showing up, just like in
having
your own
fun.
Time.
Yeah. Do I show up to them? Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, cool. Hell yeah. Cool. And I actually want to get, like I said, I want to do my stream again. I miss streaming.
Cool.
Like, I miss doing things. You know, you get so wrapped up in, like, moving your career forward that sometimes you lose the fun stuff that you used to do.
I know that. Yeah.
And I miss the fun stuff. So I'd like to get much more involved in things.
Cool,
man. So
let's do some fun stuff.
Let's do some fun stuff together. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Try Zeta out and let me know what you think. Like,
yes.
I really am excited to see more of the community trying it, and tell us what you think sucks, right? Like, I'm open.
Zeta.com.
Zeta.xata.io.
Zeta.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it.
6-letter domain.
Whatever you call it, come find us. The Discord is a great place for us. DM me if you have any issues. And then you want to talk about community, you want to talk about Discords, find me twitter.com/DemetriusClark. I'm that on every platform. I'm an open book. I love to talk to the community. So thanks y'all so much for having me. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Really
great talking
with
you.
Peace.
Yeah. We'll see you
on the next one.
On the next JavaScript Jam.
Yeah.
Later. Awesome, man. It's great.